Welcome to Play the Advantage U.S. Men's National Team Podcast. I'm Danny Day alongside Cody Carlson. Cody and I were college soccer teammates, and we are big U.S. Men's National Team fans. This podcast covers everything U.S. Men's National Team related.
And we are back one last time for you folks. Danny Day alongside Mr. Cody Carlson. The United States lost in the round of 16 to the Netherlands. Cody, how are you feeling?
Oh, trying not to be depressed, but this is life. This is how it goes sometimes. So how about yourself? How are you doing? How are you coping with this World Cup exit for the States?
If you had asked me last week, the day after, we've given ourselves a little bit of time to cope with it all and process things. But I think overall, proud of the team and proud of getting back to the World Cup, because that's always a big accomplishment. And I mean, for the U.S., that's an expectation. But, you know, failing to qualify for the 2018 World Cup was incredibly devastating for U.S. soccer as a whole. So to get back and to perform, I think, really quite well in the group stage. You can talk about the competition you were facing in the group stage, but hey, you got out of the group, you made it to the round of 16. That was kind of the expectation and what we were hoping for. And I think I was dreaming maybe we could make a little run here, do something special. And it didn't end up happening. Netherlands got us 3-1 on that fateful day. But I think overall feeling pretty good. I'm pretty positive about the team and moving forward, I think just a lot of potential. So I hope that we can capture what we had from this tournament and move forward in a good way.
Yeah. Trying to see the positives out of it all. And yeah, just overall reflecting on this World Cup run, going undefeated in the group stage, conceding just the one penalty kick against Wales in the 82nd minute to Gareth Bale. You know, not conceding against Iran or against England. That was good. Those were positives for sure. So to leak in three goals on some pretty lethal execution of final third play by the Dutch was, you know, hard to stomach. And then we left a handful of ones on the table that, you know, we needed to be more clinical in our finishing and execute better in order to get through when you get into the knockout stages of a World Cup, fine margins, right? So I think it showed there's levels to it and, you know, hopefully a good learning experience for our guys, for our young core of guys and Coach Berhalter. So just going over looking at the stats of that game.
Yeah, what were they?
I mean, we outshot Netherlands 17-11.
Wow. Okay.
Including 8 of those 17 on target. Netherlands had 6 of theirs on target. Outpossessed them 59% to 41%.
And I think that Netherlands was inviting that a little bit.
Correct.
Right?
Correct. Yeah. You know, definitely that was part of their game plan, sitting back, defending in a lower block and springing counterattacks in their 3-5-2.
And boy, were they good at it.
Very lethal. Playing through Cody Gakpo and Memphis Depay. Very good. Very, very scary when the ball turned over and they were coming at us quickly, don't you think?
Oh, very scary. Yeah. I mean, that first goal, it was, we were, you know, pressing them. And I mean, we don't want to get all the details, but we're all the way up. You got another one's trying to dribble out of their own 18-yard box. And we're thinking, okay, we got them in a good spot here. And they were just, I think they were trying to really draw us up. And then they got out and moved forward quite quickly. Ping, 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 all the way they're in. And, you know, unfortunately, I think in the group stage, we were so locked in. You said it earlier, fine margins. I think that's exactly the way I think I would describe this game as compared to the group stage. And just soccer in general is such a fun, it's a game of fine margins, sports are, right? And in the group stage, man, fine margins for us making it through or not. You know, Pulisic making that 40-yard run against Iran and getting in there and sacrificing his body and scoring, you know, fine margins there. right at the end of the game, Iran potentially having, some chances, fine margins for them not getting a goal. And so, and this game, it's fine margins. We have guys so locked in the group stage defensively. Tyler Adams is just an absolute stud, goes 90 every single game. And then, unfortunately, I think the team ultimately got a little bit gassed, and you could see that in this one, and particularly the midfield. They had been run ragged in the group stage, and I think we saw the results of that, unfortunately, against the Netherlands.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just going back to Tyler Adams, he had been our best player, and overall probably our best player. Definitely my favorite player on our roster throughout this World Cup. But yeah, he had his first major glaring mistake in this game against the Netherlands. He was tracking back on that first goal that we conceded, and he let Memphis Depay get a couple steps ahead of him, and Depay gets on the end of that cutback pass and is able to finish it cleanly past Matt Turner. And for as good as Tyler Adams has been, that you just I. And of course, he knows he wants that one back. Just if he could have just tracked back a little bit quicker, a little bit harder, he would have been there. So that was pretty brutal to take. Same thing with the second goal that, Sergiño Dest kind of gets caught sleeping and lets his man on that side, on the far side, Daley Blind, come across the box and get another cutback. Like almost, identical goals they scored.
Almost identical. Yeah.
So.
And that one too, comes off of a throwing. I mean, we're in stoppage time. 1 minute of stoppage time in the first half. You're like, okay, close this out. Let's get to the half down 1-0. I'm sure Berhalter probably already had some, things in mind. Halftime speech. And all of a sudden, our guys, we had three or four guys over there defending the throw. And I think they kind of fell asleep too. I don't remember some combination of Robinson and, Adams was the one, I think, defending maybe the cross. But, man, for us to get beat off of a throw-in, same thing against Wales, right? That's how they got their PK. It was off of a throw-in that created that. And yeah, unfortunate that we couldn't close the half out and be completely locked in to finish that out. Because had we been down only 1-0 at the half, I think it would have been a big, big difference. Going to the halftime talk and the strategies you bring out, tactics for the second half. So
for sure,
it felt like a gut punch. And down 2-0, thinking, man, there's no way out of this.
Yeah, I don't know if I felt there was no way out of it, but definitely when that second goal went in stoppage time in the first half, it was brutal. It was a gut punch, as you said, and just said, oh boy, we've really dug a hole here for us, for a team that has not been known to be able to put away many goals. It's really, really not good to concede that one, and did not finish the half strong, right? Did not start the half strong and then did not finish the half strong. I mean, the first five and the last five of each half, critical moments, right? Got to stay locked in, focused, dialed in, and we weren't. And when I'm talking about the first five, I'm talking about Christian Pulisic's first chance on goal, second minute or third minute, whichever it was. But
First Tyler Adams, chance of the game.
Yeah, Tyler Adams, finds kind of like a hopeful ball just behind the back line. And Pulisic's there to run onto it with his left foot, and it's kind of sitting up nicely on it, like a half bounce for him. And instead of really just putting his toe down and smashing it with his laces on the top of his foot, he tries to place it with his inside of his foot and kind of pass it into the bottom corner instead of just, when the ball is sitting like that, Danny, on the half bounce, I mean, you can just crush it with the top of your foot with the laces. And keep the ball low, right? Versus, if it's completely on the ground, then smashing it and keeping it low is more challenging. But so I was confused, and here I am, trying to tell our best player how to, strike a ball. I was just confused. I know he wants that one back, but if I'm in that situation, I know I'm smashing it with my laces on a half bounce. It just seems like a no brainer for me. So that was a really frustrating moment. I don't know about how you felt on that one.
Well, totally. I think that in that moment too, was kind of set the precedent for how well the Netherlands goalkeeper was going to be playing throughout the game. I mean,
yeah,
I thought he was outstanding. I mean, again, an inch or two to the right, right? That's in the back of the net. I mean, it wasn't like it was a terrible shot, but he didn't obviously connect with it how he probably wanted to. You're right. He probably should have hit it with his laces. He's going to want that one back for the rest of his life, I'm sure. And unfortunate, but the goalie makes a good save too. You know, makes his body big, comes out quick. And but at the end of the day, yeah, you'd want to see Pulisic put that one in the back of the net. And again, then that might be a completely different ball game. It would have been.
Well, and I think we started the game the first 10 minutes, really. We had the ball. We had the better of the chances. You know, I was kind of surprised, to be honest. I was saying, wow, Netherlands is really letting us play. They're sitting back and just kind of absorbing this pressure, but allowing that great chance by Pouli. And then suddenly, like, seemingly their first chance they get, they cut it back, and Memphis Depay gets the goal, right? And you're just kind of like, wow, this is soccer, isn't it? Like, it can be a brutal game sometimes. So, but just going back to the kind of the tactical setup, I mean, credit to the Dutch coaching staff and how they set their team up and said, okay, you know what, U.S. national team, that they fancy themselves that, you know, Berhalter ball, they can possess the ball, they can keep the ball. Let's invite that, and we'll sit back, and then we'll look to spring counterattacks. I mean, they've watched, you know, that's the recipe to beat the U.S. You know, watching, you know, Canada beat us and tie us in World Cup qualifying with that type of, you know, absorb and counter type of pressure or type of tactical setup. And then, you know, Japan did the same thing in that friendly in September leading up to this World Cup, you know, and they beat us 2-0 off of just absorbing and looking to counter, right? So kind of, I thought the Dutch would try to hold on to the ball a little bit more. I was a little bit surprised how much they, you know, invited us to play, which I guess shows some respect towards us as well in a way, right? Like, okay, U.S. can play. And credit to Greg. That's something he's been saying all along, is let's change the way, you know, the world views U.S. soccer. And I think the world now says that U.S. is a better possession team than they have ever been.
Absolutely. Yeah. So. I think that the world would say, and I think Americans, if you take a just look at it, man, we played pretty good soccer overall, I think, in this tournament, like attractive soccer, you know, maybe not always in the final third, that's where we struggle, but maybe in the back and then middle thirds, you know, not too bad at soccer. I think one of the things I noticed in this game, none of our guys were super sharp. And in the group stage, I thought Tim Ream was just didn't even miss a beat, not even one play, basically. And in this game, he just wasn't quite as sharp. He was missing passes, passing it. You know, Netherlands was intercepting his passes, and they were inviting him. You know, you had Gakpo and Memphis Depay really taking away the outside backs and funneling them to the middle. And then you have the three center mids being basically man-marked. That was the Netherlands strategy. And so the options, I think the U.S., I think maybe knew it was coming, but then just we weren't quite sharp enough just with our passing. And again, I think to some extent, the three center mids, I think, were gassed, but the guys in general, you saw it by the end of the first half. And then as the game went on, just were tired and we just weren't sharp enough.
Yeah. I mean, Musa and McKennie Adams logged a ton of minutes in this World Cup. I mean, Musa, this was not his sharp game at all. He gave everything in the Iran game at the end of that game, the third game of the group stages. He kind of collapsed to the ground and he had given everything. And I noticed right from the start in this game, he looked tired. Jedi on the left back, I mean, he was getting forward, but he had some really sloppy, careless touches you could probably attribute to fatigue because he played every minute of every game so far, right?
Yes.
You know, and we needed him too, but yeah, I mean, that's what's going to end up happening. And, you know, while we're on Jedi, we talk about the third goal that we concede.
Oh man,
in this game, and it's rough. You talk about physical fatigue. It's also mental fatigue here. It sets in for him because, mm-hmm. you know, he's man marking in our own box here, anticipating a cross coming in, but you know, without realizing that Dumfries is, you know, as the right sided wing back for the Netherlands is, is further out and where he should be as the left back. He's got to be picking up the right wing back of the opponent. Instead, he picks up an attacking player who's kind of more central, which should be Tim Ream's guy, and completely allows a free Dumfries to come in and one time the ball into the far post for the third goal. So really frustrated with that. That's definitely an individual error on Jedi's part. And against a lethal team like the Netherlands proved to be in this round of 16 game. I mean, knockouts, fine margins, and one simple mistake there, one let down, one lapse of concentration and marking the wrong guy, and we get punished for it. So pretty brutal on that one.
Yeah, and it came at a brutal time too, right? I mean, and we didn't mention our goal. Maybe we'll get to that in a sec, but you know, the game was 2-1 at this point after Haji Wright's goal. And yeah, you had Tim Ream and Anthony Robinson. They're both basically marking one guy, not communicating with each other or something happening there. But then you also have Matt Turner, your goalkeeper. You hope that he's going to be doing a better job of seeing the whole field and saying, hey, Anthony, we got a guy wide open to your left. And maybe he was communicating. Maybe Anthony didn't hear him. We don't know. But clearly the coordination was not there. And that was just, you know, we had had some hope at that point, down a goal 10, 15 minutes ago. And that just kind of felt like the dagger. And I think took the wind out of our sails.
Yeah, absolutely. So just going back to like all three goals that we conceded can be attributed, maybe not completely, but a good amount of the fault, the blame is down to individual errors and individual lack of concentration and or lapses in focus. I mean, the first one, Tyler Adams, you know, failing to track back on Memphis Depay for the cutback for the goal. You know, the second one, you know, Sergiño Dest kind of allows, David Blind to get in, you know, into that spot at the top of the box and, you know, allows him to cut in front of him and get the cutback goal on that one. And then Anthony Robinson marks the wrong guy, right? So individual errors on those three moments, and it turns into critical moments that punish us. So it's frustrating. And as much as we want to talk about like tactics and setup and, you know, that kind of stuff, I mean, when it comes down to those, it's not necessarily tactics that killed us, right? Oh. It's individual errors in those three moments. So
lack of focus and not staying locked in. They were so locked in for the group stage and just were not in this game.
Yeah. So I don't know if the moment got the better of us, you know, if the moment was too big or the pressure in our minds was something too big for us, for our guys to be able to handle properly. Maybe, I don't know. But yeah, definitely frustrating. And, you know, there's a lot of people who are blaming, oh, it's the system we were playing or the formation or that kind of stuff. And I'm kind of in the camp of, that has something to do with it. But specifically on the three goals that we conceded, I don't think it was necessarily, you know, a tactics issue. It was more of an individual error issue on all three.
I agree. Yeah.
So frustrating. But let's talk about Haji Wright's absolute banger
goal. Lazo. Yeah. Goal of the tournament, I have to say.
I mean, when that thing kind of just bounced randomly off his foot and just like, it was in slow motion. It just floated it over totally everybody was. Into the back side of the goal. And we're just like, what? I mean, we'll take it, but what the hell was it, that?
Yeah, I mean, the ball after the initial clearance off of a corner kick, another not great corner kick. That was
You're
the
theme kidding.
Of this. That was the theme of this World Cup. Apparently the U.S. has hired a set-piece coach. And whoever that is did not do a good job. I mean, obviously the players have to execute, but man, we didn't see anything creative. And it was just a bunch of bad crosses is what I saw.
I don't think you're necessarily completely wrong, but it's Pulisic who assists him, I think, right?
It ended up being Pulisic. Yeah, after it got cleared, DeAndre Yedlin, like his first action of the game.
Yeah, it was a nice pass by Yedlin. Yep.
Steps in. Plays it wide to Pulisic. Pulisic sizzles it across the basically 6-yard box. And I think it was, so it's Haji Wright. He's trying to more or less like trap it. Hits like, I don't even know, the outside or bottom of his foot and launches into the back corner. I mean, not intentional. I mean, he might claim it to be intentional, but We all know that that was not intentional.
He could not replicate that same goal in 1,000 tries.
Probably like, true.
No chance. It had a lot of Julian Green vibes on the goal that Julian Green scored. It was just kind of like a random, like, came off his foot really weird. Like, he couldn't replicate that in 1,000 tries in the same way, you know. But hey, man, I guess that's an American style of goal, and we'll take however we can score, because clearly that's been part of our issue. And Danny, this leads me into something that I wanted to talk to you about, because we got to finally see Jesus Ferreira start and get minutes at the 9 spot for the United States in the World Cup. He had been an unused sub in the 3 group stage games. A lot of people were questioning, hey, why haven't we seen Jesus Ferreira? You know, is he going to get his chance? Well, he got his chance, and he started the game, played the first 45 minutes. And what were your thoughts on Ferreira's impact or lack thereof?
Yeah, well, whenever you see a player get yanked at halftime, I think there's clearly a reason why. Coach realizes that they, well, either one, the player is not effective enough, or two, they made a mistake in putting that player in. And I think maybe it was a combination of both of those things there. Ferreira, unfortunately, maybe surprisingly, didn't get any time at all in the group stage, which I think maybe was a bit of a surprise to both you and I. So then to see him in the starting lineup, because Josh Sargent was injured, didn't totally shock me, because Haji Wright wasn't great against Iran. We thought we might see some other combination of Reyna or Weah, someone else going up top, and then
Aronson even.
Maybe. Yeah, Aronson, but Greg stuck with his nines and decided to put Jesus in, and Jesus just did not add anything. He didn't bring anything positive. I don't think he honestly had one positive thing that contributed to the U.S. going forward in the first half.
Unfortunately, I think you're spot on with the case there. And he had one clip that I remember where he completely passed the ball to the Netherlands and sprung a counterattack for them going at us. And I was saying, oh boy, this is not good from Jesus. So I think we learned, unfortunately, the hard way that this level for him was too high of a level. I mean, FC Dallas and MLS is one thing, but you know, round of 16 World Cup. And maybe that's not the fairest situation to throw him into, but at the same time, I mean, it's a sink or swim moment, and he sank for us, unfortunately. So
he did. He sank. I mean, it's a tough moment to come into. You hope that they take their chance. And yeah, and I mean, unfortunately for him, you know, personally, too, I'm sure he would have loved to have done a lot better. And he just, you know, but you're going against Virgil van Dijk, Nathan Ake in the back there, Timber. It's a tough back line. Big dudes.
Big, Jesus, athletic, Jesus, physical.
Jesus is not a big guy. And, no. I mean, quite frankly, again, our system and everything else has never really set up our nines to be super effective anyway. And then Jesus just really individually was not effective at all. And, you know, amidst all those tactics as well. So.
Right.
So. Yeah.
Haji came in up top and offered a little bit more. Obviously, he got a goal. He had another chance where Pulisic fed him in behind.
Yes. He was
almost there, but credit to Netherlands keeper.
Great read by the goalkeeper. I mean, it was a through ball that, looking back, and I think Pulisic's going to want that one back a little bit too, to have maybe hit that a little bit softer just in stride. You look at the film too, Haji Wright had to. He wasn't quite sure he was onside, but then he like stopped his run and then he had to start again.
Yeah.
And he could have maybe curled his run a little bit so that he wouldn't have had to completely stop in his tracks.
Right. Yeah.
I think he could have done a better job. So it was, I think, a combination of Pulisic and Haji not totally hitting that one there. But I mean, again, a good read by the goalkeeper.
Yeah, he came out far. I mean, he came outside of his box to make a sliding tackle there. But Haji also had another one where he picked off a back pass from Memphis Depay. He was trying to play his goalkeeper back, and Haji slipped in there and picked up the back pass, took a big touch trying to get
past the
goalkeeper and tried to slot it. But his touch was unfortunately too long, too big of a touch, and ended up being all smoke and no fire there. Really a frustrating one. But overall, I think he was probably more effective than Jesus.
Remember though, so yeah, Haji did come in, but he didn't come in until a little bit later, right? It was Reyna, Gio Reyna, the all mystical who we haven't seen all tournament, basically Gio Reyna.
Yeah.
Berhalter subs him in, says, okay, no, Gio, now that we're down two goals, I think it's time. We'll let you have a chance.
Yep.
And puts him in there as kind of a false nine, I guess you could call him. And he was fine. He wasn't super effective. I mean, he did some good things out there, but wasn't a different, it wasn't like a true difference maker.
No.
And it's just, I think the whole Gio Reyna situation in this tournament really got messed up. In my mind, he's one of our top two or three talented players on the team. And to only give him essentially 55 minutes of game time over the course of four games is, and I understand you got through the group stage without Gio Reyna. So I guess in some senses, you could give credit to Greg Berhalter, but in other ways, man, you don't give him any time in those first three games. He's coming in cold to this one, down 2-0. You're telling me that you couldn't have, if you're thinking you're going to play him 45 minutes potentially, you couldn't have started him, maybe get him in the flow with the starters when the game is 0-0. So I think it was just a disappointing, I'm sure for Gio personally, disappointing and frustrating, knowing that he feels like he could bring a lot to the table. And then two, just frustrating for the team to not have one of your, really, I think most best attacking threats out there. So,
yep, that's the one major knock against Greg Berhalter in this World Cup, in my opinion, is the lack of usage of Gio Reyna. And I mean, there's been conflicting stories about his health and is he fit? Is he, you know, is he injured or fighting some sort of injury or, you know, something preventing him from being able to be used, you know, from being a starter? Like, if, I mean, I guess that was my assumption, but it's still unclear. Like, I mean, we're hearing conflicting. Some people are saying, oh, he's injured or he's not fit. That's why he can't be a starter, because then we're going to have to sub him at halftime anyways or whatever. And then you got some people saying, no, he's 100% ready to go. So why aren't we starting him? Why aren't we playing him more minutes? So that's a frustrating one. But yeah, it's definitely someone that was underutilized in the World Cup overall by us. And maybe someone that could have, if we given him more minutes, could have, you know, done some more damage or helped the team be more successful, right? Always easier to say in hindsight, but sure. Yeah, definitely a knock against Greg Berhalter by not using one of our most creative attacking players for yeah. 55 minutes or whatever, over 45 minutes in this game in the round of 16, plus another, what, seven that he subbed
seven
in?
Seven or eight, yeah.
So.
Just disappointing, and you hope that, I mean, as a player personally, Gio can take this experience and say, okay, and I'm not getting my chance. I got to go back to my club team now and really just start earning it and start really rising to another level, because before his injury spell this last year, he was really on track to be, I think, one of the top, you know, maybe five young players in the world. And, you know, unfortunately, injury set him back a little bit, but I think he still has the potential to get there. So you hope that he takes this and really helps drive him forward to get to a whole nother level as he progresses. He'll be 23 in this next 22, 23 this next World Cup. He's going to be in a good spot, hopefully, whether, you know, with club and with country as well, so that he can be with our other, you know, young stars we have, being one of the ones who's leading the way.
Yeah, definitely excited. I mean, we're going to hopefully count on him and to be someone that's one of our guys, one of our main guys for the next cycle. But a lot can change. as sure. We've seen, I mean,
so much can change.
I mean, if we in 2017 were to have guessed this lineup, how many of these players would we have gotten?
We would have gotten Pulisic, and that's Pulisic, about it.
Probably just him. Right. I mean,
yeah.
Matt Turner. No.
No.
Right. Walker Zimmerman. Dest wasn't even on the team yet. He wasn't, you know, committed to a country yet.
Musa, McKinney, Adams. None of those guys have even made appearances.
Yeah. I mean, Weah was playing with the youth national team.
Right.
McKinney. I mean, Tim Ream. But yeah. So I guess all I'm saying is, yeah, we have a good core right now, but there's no guarantees that this core will completely remain intact for 2026. Right. There will be drops in form. There will be increases in form, and there will be younger players or other players that might have a resurgence, right?
Exactly.
So
I think that's the thing I've realized about soccer and just like the U.S. men's national team is, one, don't ever write anyone off, because you never know. Like Tim Ream, for instance, man, what a resurgence he had, and he was debatably maybe our best player in this World Cup, in many ways.
Steady Ream.
So steady. And I mean, he's even saying, you know, even though he's 35, he's saying that he's not retiring from the national team yet. So who knows how long he'll stay around. I mean, and if we have, you know, a new coach or Berhalter sticks around, whether they'll stick with him or not. But I mean, he clearly showed the quality that he still has. But yeah, I mean, I think just in general, we got so many young guys from like our U20 team who qualified for the Olympics who are coming through, who are going to be getting into big clubs in Europe or in MLS and really improving. So yeah, we have a good core, which is a great start. And now we have this new good crop coming in, I think, which is what is really exciting. And you hope that we can, because I think one of the things we saw in this tournament was that maybe separates the U.S. from some of the next level teams, the Frances, the Argentinas, is Croatia, your Moroccos, I guess you could say that, you know, now that we know our final four is, at least your France, you know, they're just so deep. They have their starting 11, but then all their next guys who are coming in are just as good. And
well, case in point, Karim Benzema, starting 9 for France, gets injured. Next guy up, Olivier Giroud, and he's banging in all kinds of goals for France.
Exactly. I mean,
what's that like, having two world-class nines?
Incredible.
Man, if we could do that, if we could get that on our team, then now we're cooking with gas.
Yeah. France is, you know, doesn't have Paul Pogba, Conte, and there's a couple others too. I mean, they had they had major injuries to their squad prior to the World Cup, and yet here they are again in the semifinals of the World Cup looking to repeat. So we're certainly not there yet, but we're striving to get towards being at that level at someday. I mean, that's the hope.
Yeah, definitely. Let me put you on the spot here, Greg Berhalter. What do you rate him? What do you grade him? And are you in the camp of giving him an extended contract, or is it time to move on and get a new coach for the U.S. men's national team? Where are you at with this, Danny?
Great question. Yeah, I would say for the tournament, for the group stage, I would say B+. Got us through the group stage, got us out of the group stage. You know, had we gotten first in the group, which I think really was actually achievable, had we really gone for it against England, not that we didn't go for it, but had we pushed a little harder. So, you know, I'd say B+ in the group stage. And then I think in this Netherlands loss, it's a failing grade, and we lost. And again, some of that's on the players, but I think ultimately he's done a good job of getting this group of young guys together to believe in the system, believe in the tactics, believe in just what the core principles of this team are. And I think that with how young the team was, that those were probably some of the most important things. And with that being said, I don't think that he should be brought back on for a second cycle. I'd like to see someone new with fresh ideas come in. And I don't necessarily have the answer right now as to who that would be. But, you know, you read different reports and see things that, hey, you know, some guys might want him back, but other guys, I think as they're continuing to grow in their careers, they want some new, fresh ideas. And quite frankly, under Berhalter and his system, you got to give him this. We were very stout defensively in CONCACAF and in the group stage of the World Cup. Netherlands game obviously was a little bit different. Again, I think some of that attributed to some just defensive individual lapses. But we were stout defensively under Berhalter on the whole. Attacking wise, we never really got there. We never really hit full steam ahead. And so I think that I would love to see a coach come in that's going to help us be much more effective in the attacking third and helping us find some more goals. Because I think that that's been a frustration throughout this cycle. So I'd say thank you, Berhalter. I think you did a fine job and got us back to the World Cup and out of the group stage. So props to you, but I think it's time for someone new and someone fresh. What about you? Where are you in this camp?
Yeah, I'm pretty close with your assessment as well. Going back to like put us in 2017 again after we failed to qualify for the 2018 World Cup.
Yeah.
If you'd have told me then that Greg Berhalter is going to take us to the round of 16 in the 2022 World Cup, I would have taken that for sure.
For sure. For sure.
Hands down. Like no questions asked. We could be playing, you know, kickball direct, you know, the ugliest style of soccer ever. But if we're in the round of 16, I'd take that. Okay. And so now, you know, 4 or 5 years later, now that we're here, we made that. We did that. We went undefeated in the group stage. You know, had an exit against a solid Netherlands team in the round of 16, against a lethal counterattacking team. And, you know, so for Berhalter to get us pretty much right where I thought we had the potential to get to, I thought a quarterfinal appearance was on the cards if everything fell. If we played our very best and everything fell our way in terms of, you know, lucky bounces here and there and the right calls from the referees and that kind of stuff. But I thought if we play to our abilities, we should be getting to the knockout stages. So we did that. And Berhalter to guide us through World Cup qualification, get us to the World Cup and go out in the round of 16. I give him a B plus, A minus maybe even. And I'll tell you what he's done that I really admire, and I think is more important than tactics and stuff, is the culture that he's been able to build within the U.S. men's national team camp. Yeah. Including the ability to recruit and convince dual nats like Serginho Dest and Yunus Musa to want to rep the States. I mean, those are two massive players for us. So full tip of the hat to Berhalter on his ability to develop those relationships with those dual nationals and convince them to be part of our team. And as we clearly saw throughout the World Cup qualifying cycle and into the World Cup itself, Musa and Dest, big time players, right? So,
oh yeah.
Full credit to Berhalter and his staff for doing that. I can understand why you want some fresh coaching and a coaching change for new ideas and to mix it up. As a coach myself, I find it, I have to side on Berhalter's, you know, saying, hey, if I'm getting a B plus, A minus, and I finished, you know, kind of, you know, where everyone would hoped we would have finished realistically, expectations wise, it's really tough to call for his head, right? It's really, sure. really tough to call for a regime change and that kind of thing. So, I leave it up to him at this point. I say, hey, Berhalter, if you want to stick around for a second cycle, see how it goes, then I'd welcome it. But there is also rumors that he's, you know, on the hunt for a club job in Europe somewhere. So we'll see, man. But that's kind of where I fall on it.
Sure. Yeah, and just thinking back to our, you know, previous coaches. So Arena was kept on for a second cycle after the 2002 World Cup. It makes sense. They make the quarterfinals. He's kept on. 2006, crash out in the group stage. Yep. Then you have Bob Bradley. He has the 2010 World Cup. Great. Gets kept on for a second cycle. Then he gets canned, you know, a year, year and a half later. They bring in Jurgen Klinsmann. Klinsmann, 2014 World Cup, gets to the round of 16. But before the World Cup happens, U.S. Soccer had given him an extension to the 2018 World Cup. And it's like, wow, that probably wasn't a smart thing to do. And in hindsight, obviously, because then 2 games into the 2018 World Cup qualifying cycle, he's canned because the U.S. has lost its first 2 games. Yep. So I guess I just do wonder. Not saying that those things are going to say necessarily, yeah, okay, Berhalter is really going to struggle this second time around, but it does concern me that the idea of the second cycle and being able to again produce results as a coach, and what fresh how are you going to get better? And maybe you've learned a ton, and maybe that's going to help you. What you've learned is going to help you get better as a coach, which you would hope that it would. But it does concern me. But you know, at the same time, I think you're right. He's done a lot to say, hey, I could be given a second chance here. So I guess I'm a little bit torn. I think I'd like to see a fresh face, but I could understand if U.S. soccer decided to extend his contract.
That's a good point that you brought up about the history of, you know, the coaches and, you know, given the second chance and how it doesn't seem to work out as they, you know, keep going after that World Cup, you know, whether it's Bradley or Klinsmann or Arena, right? So, yeah, history's not on the side. It's not a positive situation looking like that. So I think probably the best situation would be for Greg Berhalter to say thanks, but I'm taking a club job somewhere in Europe, yeah. And we leave on, you know, mutual terms would probably be the best situation. And then we go find someone like, who knows, Zinedine Zidane or somebody crazy to come in and help us win the 2026 World Cup, right? So
yeah, I love it. In terms of finding a new coach, do you have like a, you know, do you feel like it's, does it have to be an American, you know, someone from MLS because he, you know, knows the MLS and the American game here, you know, one of our American coaches over in Europe, or could it be just kind of best coach available? Because I've seen a lot of different pundits out there saying, you know, different things, got to be American, or someone else is saying, no, you go for best coach available. And I think Ernie Stewart has said it, that the coach, whoever they do hire, he said this back when he was hiring Berhalter, that they have to speak English. So I imagine that's going to be the same here too.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm kind of impartial. I mean, this should be the best candidate, the right fit. If they have to speak English, and fair enough. Yeah, I'm kind of, whoever the best candidate is to take us there, then great. I do think that CONCACAF is different in a lot of ways than maybe other qualifying situations across the world. Presents its unique challenges with the geography and stuff. I mean, so maybe someone who's familiar with CONCACAF would be helpful. Because I think what we saw with Berhalter, because he was green going into this as well. I mean, he hadn't experienced it. So, I mean, as we sense a little bit of maybe naivety about, you know, assuming that we were going to be able to play a nice possession, attractive brand of soccer down in you know, away games in CONCACAF is unrealistic. Maybe someone who has that kind of understanding about CONCACAF's challenges and what it's like, but yeah, overall that's kind of my thoughts on it. Do you have someone in mind, don't you? You're like, oh yeah, this coach for sure has to be
well bad. You know, I love Jesse Marsh. I don't, you know, sometimes his tactics can concern me a little bit, but it seems like his players go absolutely 120% for that guy. And the thing is, he's in the lead situation right now too, right? And so he didn't get fired before the World Cup break, so he's not available. You know, Leeds has him on. So I don't think that he's necessarily going to be leaving that job, and you know, unless he were to get fired per se. So since he's not available, I don't have any other, you know, maybe, you know, you look at, like I say, a Jim Curtin out of Philadelphia. He seems to always get more, you know, out of less. He does an incredible job there with Philadelphia and the youth that they have. With that being said, he wouldn't necessarily like wow me. You know, I know the U.S. has been in conversations in the past, has approached Pep Guardiola, you know, had conversations kind of when just over the years over with him. You know, Zinedine Zidane's been the rumor, other coaches, club coaches who are available. You know, you also consider what coaches from this World Cup who have now been canned from other countries, might we consider any of them? You know, I saw some people throwing out the name Gareth Southgate today from England. He to me feels like a Berhalter 2.0 in some senses. And I think he's done a really pretty good job with England overall. I wouldn't want to see him step into the role. So I don't know. I don't know the answer, but I would be hopeful that the U.S. would go through, really knock on every door and say, okay, what are our options here? And also knowing that you might have Berhalter as an option. I don't like in this last cycle, I think we learned that they pretty much sought after Berhalter, and that was more or less who they interviewed. I think they interviewed maybe one other candidate, and but is Berhalter going to be was their guy?
Yep.
I hope we really knock on every door this time.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. If that's the case, if that's the decision moving forward that we're going to make a change, then yeah, let's aim for the stars, right? With some major big time coach that. Yeah, the Peps or the Zidanes of the world.
Yeah, I mean, why not, right? I mean, so you have the U.S. is hosting the 2026 World Cup. So it's kind of an interesting situation, right? No World Cup qualifying for the U.S.
Yep.
So you're going to have CONCACAF Nations League. You're going to have CONCACAF Gold Cup. Copa America seems to be rumored in some, you know, news outlets reporting that it's a done deal that the USA, Canada, and Mexico are going to be in it. The Copa America 2024. Which would be massive. They're even saying that it might be hosted in the U.S., that would be fun, incredible. I'm a little bit intrigued because the World Cup is going to be in the U.S., North America. At this point, then, do you just schedule all of our games in the United States because that's where we're going to be playing the World Cup? So why not just schedule all your games in the U.S.? Why would you even go on the road? I know that there are benefits to going on the road, but if you're not going to be playing on the road until after the next World Cup, why would you?
Yeah, that's a great point. I've thought about that too. And I think I lean towards, well, if we're preparing for home games, then let's play home games.
Yeah. Play on fields that you know are going to be good quality. Don't go down to a muddy pitch in El Salvador, unless you have to in CONCACAF Nations League or whatever that might be. But it'll be interesting to see how the U.S. soccer does do that. I also hope that they spread the games out, whatever games they do have, spread them out a little bit, not all East Coast or Midwest and Ohio. I know you and I went to a game in Ohio, which was fun, cold, but I hope they send some games out west to us.
I agree. Well, Danny, what as we kind of finish this up, do you have a favorite moment of this World Cup that sticks with you?
Of this World Cup?
Yeah.
Yeah,
with the U.S. tough. National team, obviously.
For sure. You know, it's interesting. Two of our three goals, we didn't really have like big celebrations. Pulisic gets hurt on his goal. Haji Wright gets the wackiest goal you've ever seen. It was like, okay, grab the ball, get it back to the half line, let's go again. You know, thinking back to that Tim Weah goal against Wales, that was a pretty fun moment. I mean, a perfect passing sequence and through ball and finish. You know, you get the full celebration, the epic knee slide from Tim Weah there. And I think that was, I had to think back, it was probably my favorite moment just because able to enjoy it with, like, you know, cheering and yelling and excitement. I mean, obviously the Pulisic goal against Iran that puts us through was an incredible moment in itself too. I think it was just a little bit different emotions too, feeling like, oh no, you know, is he okay? So sure. I guess that was probably that Tim Weah goal was my favorite moment of the World Cup. What about you?
Favorite moment is going to be the end of the Iran game where the ball comes into the box and goes deflected through Matt Turner's legs.
Yes. So
Walker Zimmerman is there to clear it basically out of the goal mouth.
Yes.
And prevent that ball from trickling over the line.
What a moment.
In an epic redemption for giving up a silly penalty kick against Gareth Bale in the first game against Wales, where we dropped points there. So for Walker to have that redemption arc was phenomenal, and my favorite moment of the World Cup for the U.S., actually. One of the two Bun brothers, right? Zimmerman and Ream.
The Bun brothers, man.
Bun bros.
Forever will they be remembered.
Yeah,
the Bun brothers. I love that. Yeah. Well, gosh. Well, I mean, it's been a fun journey. We started this journey, I guess, almost 2 years ago now, back in just the start of 2021. And Man, because I think we started it just prior to even the Olympic qualifying, when that failure, back the initial failure, so we had, it was kind of a rough start, but it was like the excitement of the new team, so many new young players. Berhalter, we were in COVID at that point. What are we going to do? World Cup qualifying, everything's getting changed. We've had a fun ride. I mean, 20 some podcasts later now, and who knows how many we'll do down the road. We might decide to re-up this podcast down the road when we think it's the right time. But I've enjoyed having the chance to do this with you, Cody, and thanks for joining me on it.
Yeah, man, it's been fun. It's been fun. It's kind of cool to have like a little bit of a closure at the end here of the World Cup for the U.S. men's national team's run. And happy we made it. Happy we performed, to the expectations that at least that I had. I think a lot of us had. So pretty fun. It's been a good ride. I wish it could have continued into the next rounds, but I guess we'll have 2026 to look forward to.
That we will. That we will. Well, man, and for all of our listeners out there, we appreciate you. And thanks, everyone, for listening. For Cody, I'm Danny. This has been Play the Advantage, U.S. Men's National Team. Go USA.